McCarthy Insurance Group, serving the community for over 70 years. For home, farm, motor, life, health and business insurance, log on to mig.ie or free phone 1800 50 11 11. Probably your best call in 2024. Charles McCarthy Insurance is trading as McCarthy Insurance Group is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
My first guest tonight is AIM2 leader Pather Tobin. Prior to this upcoming election, polls have put AIM2 as the fifth largest party in the country, despite only currently having a single TD. You're very welcome to the show, Pather, and thank you for coming on. We have invited all major party leaders and you are the first to respond, and it's great to chat with you this evening.
Thanks very much, Gary, for the opportunity. Greatly appreciate it.
So, firstly, I have to ask you how the campaign has been going for you so far.
It's going mighty. We're getting a wave of support coming towards AIM2 at the moment. And you, as you mentioned, we can see it in the polls. And at the doors, there's a kind of crystallisation of anger around the government, and that people are realising that, you know, if they really want a change, they have to look at AIM2. One of the big issues at the moment is that the current government, first of all, are reliant on the Green Party, but every single other opposition party currently, other than People Before Profit, are willing to put Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Greens back into government. And, you know, I know a lot of people who are out there voting at the moment will want change. So if they vote for one of the other opposition parties, they could actually find themselves with exactly the same government back in, with maybe a different tail wagging the dog. And I think that's an important issue to consider in this election. You know, AIM2 has come of age in many ways in the last year. You know, if you look at the European elections, we polled higher than the Labour Party, People Before Profit, and the Sock Dems. We led. We're the only political party to row against the referendums. We won those referendums. Those referendums had a significant impact on the direction of the country. Leo Varadkar stood down as a result, and Sinn Féin have started to change direction as a result of that as well. So it's clear that, you know, AIM2 has had a significant impact in the direction of the country in the last year. And now I think we're on the verge of significant breakthrough for AIM2 around the country.
And when you're out and about, are you getting a feeling from the electorate that gives you a bit of confidence as you head towards the 29th?
Yeah, well, I've been doing a lot of canvassing in about 10 constituencies. AIM2 are running 43 candidates in 43 constituencies. So for the first time in every ballot box and across the country, citizens will be able to vote for an AIM2 candidate. And that's a big opportunity for people. And the second thing that's coming towards us is that in many constituencies, probably about 10, the last seat is between AIM2 and a government TD. So again, you know, the danger is if people spread their vote too thin all over the other political parties, the government TD could sneak through. But in those constituencies, if people vote AIM2 number one, it is likely that we'll make that change and win those seats. And I think people, first of all, are coming to us around the issue of accountability. That's something that we've majored on in the last 12 months especially. You know, this government are incinerating taxpayers' money on a range of different wasteful projects. You know, so Leo Varadkar promised that the National Children's Hospital will be built by 2020 at a cost of €700 million. Here we are 4 years later, it's at €2.25 billion. We still don't even have an opening date for it. You know, we saw €300 million spent on Metro North and not a shovel put in the ground. €20 million were spent on ventilators that never worked. And Fine Gael are currently storing them in a factory at a cost of €50 grand a year. We saw over 100 electric buses that were paid for didn't move an inch and a half, you know, for a year and a half because somebody forgot to put an application form in for a charging point. So, you know, incredible waste of people's money and like projects, really important infrastructural projects, grinding to a halt currently. So we in AIM2 have been, you know, putting pressure on the government in relation to this. And incredibly, in the debate on RTE just a couple of nights ago, you know, we had the Taoiseach state that, you know, he didn't sign it. And he actually told, I believe, an untruth on television, because it's quite clear that when he was Minister for Health, he signed it. And the truth of the matter is, if the Taoiseach was actually in a private business at the moment and he wasted so much money, he would be fired. So the idea that actually returning the Taoiseach to office would be absolutely wrong in my view. Accountability needs to happen. If there's no accountability, there will be no change. There has to be a cost every time the government waste our money for there to be changed. And one of the things we want to see is a junior minister appointed to the Department of the Taoiseach with the responsibility of ensuring that there's efficiencies and eradicating waste. We want that junior minister to report directly to the Taoiseach on a weekly basis in relation to what's happening. So the Taoiseach, him or herself in the future, will be on the hook for the waste that's happening in this country. We also want to see a situation whereby all senior civil servants have written into their contracts the responsibility to mind the public purse. And if they fail in that, that there's a disciplinary procedure up to and including losing their jobs. So, like, you know, there's no doubt in my mind, unless Aint is at the helm in relation to the next government, we're not going to get a situation whereby we will have accountability in the country.
There's been a bit of talk recently and possibly confusion out and about when it comes to your stance on abortion. Can you explain to us this evening, for those listening, who would maybe like a bit more clarity from me on it?
Yeah, so first of all, I have to say this does not come up at the doors at all. So this is a little bit of a media bubble story, but basically, obviously, aim to do support the right to life of everybody. We recognise that one of the biggest reasons why abortions are happening in this country is because of the economic circumstances that people are in. So indeed, there's a committee in Leinster House found out recently that 85% of abortions happen because of socioeconomic reasons. So in other words, you know, right last year, dozens of mothers actually gave birth while they were homeless. And many of the so-called pro-choice parties actually implement policies that make women feel that they don't have a choice. So our major objective in the next government is to make sure that every mother in the country has the economic confidence to be able to raise her child to their full potential. So, for example, we want to see a second additional child benefit brought into place that's targeted at those on the lowest incomes. So there's about 100,000 children in poverty in Ireland. So we want to ensure that they have an extra child benefit to help them. And we would like that child benefit to be delivered from the fourth month of pregnancy, because a lot of the costs actually happen before the baby is born in the first place. We want to see an eviction ban, for example, for mothers, so that they can be confident that they're not going to be evicted from their homes as well. So there's significant economic support that can be brought into play to make sure that mothers do not feel that they're economically forced to have an abortion. And I think that's a positive, life-affirming policy that most people will agree with.
You say that it's not coming up on the doorsteps, and that's all very well and good, but immigration and housing must be coming up out and about when you're talking to the electorate. Where does AIM2 stand on both of those issues?
Yeah, so immigration is one of those other issues that, again, AIM2 has probably stood alone on against the government over the last while. You know, we've been probably the most critical of the government chaos in relation to immigration. Most of the information actually in the public domain on immigration is information that we actually achieved. So through our research that we found. So we found, for example, even just last year, that the government issued 1,750 deportation orders. Out of those, only 98 were ever actioned. Now, that's quite an incredible statistic when you think about it. So 5% of all the deportation orders that the government issued are actioned. Now, the government would say, well, there was another 600-odd deportation orders, which were voluntary deportation orders. But the truth of the matter is, when I asked the minister, is she sure that those individuals have left the country? The minister stated, no, she can't be sure that they've left the country. So it is absolutely bananas that for the last 3 or 4 years, first of all, we have spent hundreds of millions of euros on a really expensive process to differentiate between those who need help and those who don't need help. And yet, in the end of it, pretty much the result is exactly the same for those who fail and those who are successful. You know, another information that we found is that 5,000 people landed in Dublin Airport without travel documents last year. Now, the most of those actually came from other European countries for which they had to have a travel document to board a plane in the first place. And incredibly, last year as well, for about 2 years, AIM2 is tracking how people were coming into the country through parliamentary questions. And the minister was asking us and telling us that about 85% were coming through and registering for asylum in the International Protection Office on Mount Street in Dublin. So this obviously struck us as strange. And we said, like, we would have thought they would have registered at the ports or the airports. And then it became obvious to us that most of these people were coming across from the north of Ireland or had working visas or student visas that had expired. So we asked the minister, how are these people coming into the country? And the minister said she didn't know. And we said, well, why don't you know? She said, we don't ask them how they come into the country. Which is, again, outstanding that the government wouldn't even ask individuals seeking asylum here how they've come into the country. So we want a system that does help and support those who really do need help. But obviously those who don't need help, you know, need to be returned back to their own homes as well. So we would like to see the planning permission brought back into immigration. It's stunning. On that debate again 2 nights ago, you know, the Roger O'Gorman admitted that one of his TDs opposed planning because a house was going to overlook his window. And yet Roger O'Gorman and his government have deleted the whole planning process completely for hundreds of thousands of people in terms of IPAS. And that, for me, that just stinks of, you know, cynicism, that a person would do that, hypocrisy, that they would, you know, in one level, they would stop a person building a home beside them, and yet, in another level, they would delete the whole idea of planning permission for people. So, you know, we want to make sure that people, that there's an Irish Sea border, that if when people land in Belfast or Dublin or Wexford, that they register here. We want to see fairness in the allocation of resources. We want to see community consultation. Again, one of the biggest problems, I think, from the government, because they've created a vacuum, where there's a lack of information, and where that vacuum exists, it's like a petri dish for rumour and for bad actors to come in as well. And I want to say this as well, that there are a lot of people who are migrants in this country who have done good work, who make a great contribution to this country, and everybody that's here legally needs to be treated with respect. And, you know, it's important as well that, you know, for Aintu, the colour of a person's skin is of no more significance than the colour of their eyes. And we are a pluralist Republican political party. But we do want to see the government cop onto themselves in terms of being able to measure what's happening. And then when a decision is made, that those decisions are implemented. In terms of housing, and you're right, I think amongst younger voters, housing is a really, really big issue. Astoundingly, 500,000 people in this country, 500,000 adults, are now living with their parents. That is just like 500,000 adults are living with their parents. I know, like, families who are telling me at the door that they are putting off having children for maybe 5 to 10 years, or they're cancelling even having kids ever because they cannot get in the property ladder, they cannot get out of the box room in their family home. And, like, even schools are telling me that there's a fall-off now in the children registering for junior infants in schools, because this government's catastrophe in housing is changing the fabric of this country at the moment. So, you know, first of all, the low-hanging fruit for us is that there's 100,000 empty homes in this country, right? Now, having an empty home in a, having 100,000 empty homes in a housing crisis is nearly as bad as sending food off in ships during a famine. You know, it's just bonkers. Now, the government is giving a refurbishment grant for those empty homes, but they're given five every month. Think about that. That means it'll take 1,600 years before the government get those homes back into use. And even like there's 4,000 empty local authority homes at the moment. All those local authority homes will be enough to house everybody who's currently registered homeless. It is incredible. And this is, again, the frustration in this country. There's no talk of reform. So a private empty home that's for rental will be turned around in about 3 or 4 weeks, and then it will be re-rented. It takes the state an average 8 months to turn around a local authority home to re-rent it. So the state is currently the biggest hoarder of empty homes, and we want to get those back into use. Obviously, we're looking to invest money in social housing. We want to build 15,000 social and affordable homes. We want to make sure that, as well, one of the biggest problems here is workers, right? There's actually probably hundreds of thousands of Irish construction workers. The sad thing is about half of those are working in Australia and Canada. So we want to see what we call Operation Shamrock. And this is an Aintu plan to bring home many of these construction workers back to Ireland. We will give them a grant for travel and accommodation and a tax break for 4 years so that they can ease back into the country. And we will build thousands of houses for those. And we're going to get planning exemption for those homes to be built. The government said it couldn't be planning exemption for homes, but yet they are building modular homes at the moment to beat the band without planning. So we believe that that can be done to help resolve this. And the other issue is the government collects about 55,000 euros in taxes and charges for every home that's built. And by the time you get a mortgage out on that 55 grand, you probably pay double that back over 30 years. You'll probably pay 100 grand on this, those government charges. So we're going to delete all government charges on the constructions of homes for a three-year period to bring down the cost of construction. And the other point there is a lot of builders are not building at the moment because they can't make it work financially for them. And the reduction on that price would actually bring those other builders back into the market and get them building again.
Okay, that's the promises from AIM too, if you were to get into government. But as we know with Irish politics, after the election, anything can happen. And always around this time of year, people start to whisper about coalitions and partnerships and what the next Dáil could possibly look like. And you've recently described Fianna Fáil as a hollow ideological husk. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, so there was a time in days gone by when Fianna Fáil had, you know, a policy on Irish unity. They would have had a policy on Irish neutrality. They would have had a policy on building social houses. And they would have a policy on small farmers, etc. And, you know, pretty much all of that is gone. And don't get me wrong, I do think that many members of that, you know, just rank and file members or even supporters would still probably hold some of those elements dear to them. But as far as the party nationally is concerned, like the likes of Micheál Martin, etc., like there's no evidence that he holds any of those values dear to him at all. So I think the core values have been hollowed out of Fianna Fáil in the last number of years. And I've seen them operate in Leinster House. Like, they don't go into coalition fighting for, you know, a project that's bigger than themselves, that's important, that's, you know, that's going to change the country. Many of those negotiations are about who gets what jobs, what kind of mercs and perks are going to be achieved by people. And I just think that if we're in a situation whereby, you know, a political party has been hollowed out of its core objectives, you'd wonder why that party is still in existence in many ways. And, you know, I do think that's, you know, it's very sad to see that. In terms of Sinn Féin, you know, obviously I would have an insight into Sinn Féin, and Sinn Féin's changed in the last number of years, unfortunately. And again, I think a lot of people are really disappointed by that. I think Mary Lou has turned the party into a flip-flop shop, to be honest, unfortunately. They've changed direction on rakes of different issues. Like, I remember I was in a Dáil during the hate speech bill going through Leinster House. Now, don't get me wrong, like, we abhor hate, obviously. We want people to engage respectfully. But the government's bill was a bill that actually looked to bring about censorship of respectful speech. And, you know, I was, again, into, like a lot of things, was the only political party that was pushing it back against all aspects of this bill. And right beside me, Sinn Féin had come out fully supporting the government and stating that the government's right, wanted to go further. And I was shocked because I remember at the time when there was Section 31, and Section 31 was a censorship on Sinn Féin activists. And I couldn't believe that within 30 years, they had gone from railing against censorship to actually, you know, looking to support the government implement censorship. So they flip-flopped on immigration, the hate speech bills, the carbon taxes, the referendums. And I just think it's really important that Sinn Féin starts to work out what they actually believe in. What, you know, not to be so mobile and fluid in terms of their objectives. And that's a difficulty there at the moment as well.
It sounds to me like you're narrowing your options a little bit, because that sounds to me like, you know, you're ultimately ruling out Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin. And if AIM 2 were to get elected, what would be the perfect mix for you? What would you like to get into if you were to get into government?
I suppose, to be clear, we're not ruling out those of the two latter parties. And we are ruling out Fine Gael and the Greens because of the damage that they've done to the country. You know, especially, as I said, the waste that Simon Harris has been involved in. And Roger O'Gorman has done an awful, awful damage to rural Ireland over the last number of years. In Fianna Fáil's case, I am very critical of them. But as I said, they're transactional. I think it'll be easier to direct Fianna Fáil than either Fine Gael or the Greens. I don't think that Fianna Fáil would go in any direction you push them. And I'm just saying, with regard to Sinn Féin, I just think they need to get their act together before government, because I just think it's not a good place to be negotiating with a party that's not sure of where they stand themselves. So we're not ruling it out in relation to those two parties, but because the reason we're not that we have any desire to go into government with them. But, you know, things are so serious for people at the moment. And there's, you know, the cost of living crisis. And this has been off the radar in many ways with a lot of the government parties. But the cost of living crisis is still raging for so many families. There are, like, so many families out there for fuel and food is out of reach for them still. And, you know, what really frustrates me, if you look, again, an Aintu parliamentary question last year found out that the government made 3.8 billion euros in fuel taxes last year. You know, that's an incredible thing. That was the most ever, and it was in the jaws of a cost of living crisis. So what the government, you know, did was they gave you tea and sympathy and said, God, it's terrible that there's a cost of living crisis. But they just, like, jacked up your fuel taxes. And electricity is the dearest here in Ireland than in the whole of Europe. The government are giving two electricity credits around this election. Both electricity credits will be wiped out completely by the increase in the PSO levy and the increase in carbon taxes. Like, that's stunning. They're giving money with one hand and they're taking it back with the other hand. And you mentioned, Justin, this might sound like a small thing, and it's an interesting thing that's in our budget that we're launching tomorrow. You mentioned about the pubs, right? We believe that pubs are important locations in our society. We're famed for the wonderful nature of our pubs around the country. And those pubs play a big role, especially in rural Ireland, in terms of, you know, socialising. And, you know, we're becoming more isolated with in terms of social media, etc. And that's having a negative effect, I think, on mental health. So we want to see more people going to the pubs. We think that a pint drank in a bar is a safer pint than a equivalent drank at home. Because of that socialising effect, and also because of some level of supervision in terms of drinking in a pub. So we want to see a 10 cents per unit reduction in excise on beer and alcohol that's sold in bars and pubs to energise those locations too. So that's an idea that we have in terms, we want to see a VAT rate reduction.
That's what I wanted to ask you, in terms of the hospitality sector, they've been crying out for a VAT cut.
Absolutely. Like, it's amazing, right? So what the government has done is they've stuck small pubs and restaurants across the country basically in the same tier as massive hotels that are making millions of euros of profit. And some of these hotels, as we know, you know, are gouging around concerts and football matches at 300-400 euros per room per night. So what we want to do is separate out those big hotels from small restaurants and pubs. And we want to reduce the VAT rate from the 13.5% to down to 9%. Now, one of the big frustrations I have in this election is the government are given a blizzard of promises in recent times. And yet those promises are hollow. And what I mean by that is the government are talking about reducing the VAT rate, but Aintu put it to them just about 4 weeks ago in the budget that they should do this, and they refused to do it. So the government also are promising now to get rid of the means test when it comes to carers. Aintu put forward two motions in the last 1 year looking to get rid of the means test for carers. You know, and the government said no. And another situation was, you know, the government talking about 6,000 Gardaí to be employed in the next 5 years. The number of Gardaí has fallen every single year that Helen McEntee has been Minister for Justice. You know, it's like the Gardaí are retiring and resigning at a greater rate than ever before. They're getting attacked at a greater rate than ever before. And, you know, it feels so frustrating to hear the government lash out these promises when they've been doing the opposite in government. And the crime and antisocial behaviour is important. And this weekend is going to be, you know, an important weekend in terms of crime and antisocial behaviour. A year ago, our capital city, Dublin, was in flames. Millions of euros of damage done to the city. Reputation shattered internationally, you know, lives put at risk, and Gardaí's lives put at risk. Now, there was a horrendous crisis in terms of policing that day. And just an example of the lack of accountability here. The Minister for Justice stated that there would be a fundamental review over the policing on that day. Now, I know it was chaotic because police at Gardaí have come to me to tell me, you know, what has happened. Gardaí were getting WhatsApp messages telling them to arrive, you know, in Santry to pick up their gear, to travel all the way out to Santry in mad traffic. All the hardware was a mess. There was real confusion about the delivery. They had to travel back in to town. Many of them didn't get there till 8 8 o'clock in the evening, and many of them were you know, put into big danger as a result. So the minister carried out a said there would be a fundamental review. Here we are coming up to the anniversary. She has not published any fundamental review. There is no critique at all into what happened on the day. There's no recommendations made. There's no recommendations implemented. Like, this government are allergic to accountability. And it's that lack of responsibility to their job is actually causing people dearly in terms of... I'll give you another example.
I want to ask you a question because I'm conscious of time, Pat.
Sure.
The leaders' debate on Monday seemed to have gone really, really well for you, and there seemed to be pretty much universal agreement when it came to the question of Israel and the ongoing tragedy in the Middle East.
Yes.
However, a lot of people commented afterwards that no one on the stage acknowledged the hostages held in Gaza or October 7th. Is there room for more nuance from the parties on the conflict?
Yeah, well, first of all, absolutely. The Hamas attack on Israel was a horrendous attack. It was savage. It was unbelievably vicious in its violence. And the holding of hostages is absolutely wrong by Hamas at the moment in time. And I said that on the day of the attack. We actually had our Ordesh on the day of the attack. And, you know, but I did say on the same day, I said my big worry here was that Israel would launch a response that would be so disproportionate that it would nearly eclipse completely the damage that was done by Hamas. And, you know, we're talking about well over 45,000 dead now in response to that. 70% women and children. Gaza pummeled into oblivion in major places, like loads of areas on the edge of famine. And when you see images of fathers pulling burning children out of tents as a result of indiscriminate attacks by the IDF, you know, it is really important that the international community pushes back. If Hamas was involved in this in the same way, the international community would be pushing back. It doesn't matter who's doing it. It's actually irrelevant who's doing it. The point of the matter is these are civilians who are innocent, who have been corralled into a concentration camp which is smaller than County Louth, over decades, many of them intergenerational refugees. And yet we have a situation here now where they're being pummeled to death. And, you know, there should be... And the worry I have in this is that Israel believes that this disproportionate response will guarantee its peace and survival in the future. But the truth of the matter is, and I have a long-term interest in the north of Ireland and in the history of Ireland. And I remember a speech by Padraig Pearse where he said, the fools, they give us our Fenian dead at the graveside of Jeremiah O'Donovan Rossum. And the point there is, when you shoot and kill the children of a family, it doesn't breed a peaceful response. It actually breeds the opposite. And I think that there's going to be generations of young people in Palestine who will actually be further pushed towards violence, further radicalized by the death and destruction that they're seeing around them. The only way, is a strong believer in a two-state solution. We believe that Israel has a right to peacefully exist and that Palestine has a right to peacefully exist. But the only way that you can guarantee that is through justice. Justice is the most important guarantor of peace anywhere in the country. And we've seen it in the north of Ireland, and we've seen it everywhere else. So there has to be a peace negotiation, and it has to be a just resolution. But unfortunately, the whole area is drained and drenched in so much blood. My worry is that this is just sowing the seeds for another generation of conflict.
And finally, before I let you go, and I do appreciate you giving us your time tonight, 20th of January, new president of the United States of America, Donald Trump, new doll in our country, hopefully by then. How do you think that relationship is going to look going forward?
Yeah, well, I think it's really important for Ireland to maintain a good relationship with the US. I think Donald Trump is going to have a far more, I would say, isolationist instinct. And what I mean by that is, concerns of what's happening around the world is not going to really be high on his agenda. I think he's going to be just focused on, you know, the United States. I think for Ireland there is a big exposure, and that big exposure is, I think, that Donald Trump's one of his major objectives is to bring back home American companies and their jobs, and two, to put in defensive taxes in relation to American industry tariffs as such. And both of those will actually damage Ireland as it exists. Now, I will say that Ireland has exposed itself to that threat over the years. Like, foreign direct investment is excellent. We fully support, you know, creating the conditions that make it very attractive for foreign direct investments to operate in Ireland. But the truth is, we're over-reliant on foreign direct investment, and indigenous enterprise and industry has been the poor relation here in Ireland. But indigenous enterprise and industry are far stickier. It's far less internationally mobile. So, you know, it's far less likely to move out of the country if Donald Trump reduces corporation taxes. So one of our major objectives is to maintain the great foreign direct investment that we have, but to really build up indigenous Irish enterprise to make it stronger, more efficient, and better able to deal with the storms that will come on the world economy in the future.
Well, we'll see what happens in just a couple of weeks' time, 29th of November. Thank you very much, Padraig Tobin, leader of AIM2, for joining me this evening.
Thank you, Gary. You're very good. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Best of luck on the campaign trail.
Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.